Good morning.
We will call to order the System Safety, Security, and Operations Committee meeting for Thursday, March 19th. We'll ask the Secretary for roll call.
Director DuPont Walker.
Present.
Director Kanavi.
Here.
Chair Fasano.
Here. Excellent. Okay, the next item is item 20. And at this point, we're going to be recognizing two of our employees for outstanding services, and that would be Robert Richardson and Lauren Reeves. So we'll have the report from staff and then the recognition.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board.
Okay.
Bob Holland, Interim Chief Operations Officer. I have Regina Bird, Transportation Manager, Division 5, and Hector Rojas, Maintenance Manager of Division 10, and they will... presentation for the employees of the month.
Excellent.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair and members of the board, my name is Regina Bird, and I am the transportation manager at Division 5, which is located in the city of Los Angeles in South LA. I would like to present the March Transportation Employee of the Month Award to Robert Richardson, bus operator at Division 5. Mr. Richardson has been with Metro for 34 years, beginning his career in 1981 at Division 5. In his current position, he is responsible for providing safe, clean, reliable, on-time, and courteous transportation for our passengers. He is an exceptional employee because throughout his 34 years, he has displayed excellent work ethics and is known for being both a dependable and reliable employee, which positively impacts our in-service on-time performance. Robert has demonstrated excellent defensive driving skills as a bus operator and has been commended by management for having only one avoidable accident since being employed with the agency. Robert is always very, very professional when interacting with management and his coworkers. He has been recognized multiple times for providing exceptional customer service to our patrons. We are honoring this outstanding employee today with the Transportation Employee of the Month.
Thank you very much, Regina, for that presentation. Good morning. It's nice to be here and be honored at the Operator of the Month. You know, being Operator of the Month is kind of strange, you know, because I never expect this as an operator. But looking back, all the years that I drove, started at Division 9, worked out of 2, and Division 5, you know, for being successful operator that I am, like I told a couple of operators before, if to maintain to be a good operator is to get a lot of rest. And to get a lot of rest, it makes you feel good, you have more energy, and you be more responsible when you go to work. And then you be more polite towards the passengers. So the key is to work less hours. The more hours that you work, the more stressful you're going to be. So if you want the operator, I mean, the passenger to be happy, the operator's got to be happy too. See what I'm saying? And if anything is possible, you know what I'm saying? And like a lot of young operators that talk to me, they say, why are you still here? You got 34 years. I'm still young. That's why I'm still here. And hopefully, you know, things will work out. Maybe I might retire. Maybe I don't. But I'm only 57. Hopefully, by the time I get 61, 62, I might think about it. But my wife, she's not here today, but she always told me, why do you want to work hours, all these hours? You don't need to work all them hours. Just maintain your budget and do what you always do, you know, And that's why we've been married so long, because I've been married for 32 years. She said, the more hours you work, the more cranky you get. The less hours you work, the happier we are. See what I'm saying? And then I focused on that a long time ago, and that's why I'm still married today.
Well, you've obviously had many words of wisdom that you've been able to share with us and with your wife and your co-workers. We congratulate you on your excellent service and well-deserved award.
Mr. Chair, if I might just observe, I think Robert's advice applies to CEOs as well. It certainly applies to my wife, I can tell you that. Yeah. Robert and I have much in common. He's had one chargeable accident. I myself went several weeks when I was an operator before I had my first chargeable. So I feel great kinship with you, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and congrats.
Right, and thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Hector Rojas. I'm the Division 10 Maintenance Operations Manager here in Los Angeles. I'm here to present the March Maintenance Employee of the Month Award to Lauren Reeves. He is our mechanic leader at Division 10 on day shift. Lauren has been here for over 31 years. He started with the RTD in 1984. And his current position, Lauren and his crew are responsible for troubleshooting and maintaining our bus fleet at Division 10. Lauren is a 31. Lauren is an excellent employee who is dedicated to ensuring that our division buses are repaired and running smoothly. He has strong leadership skills and is very good at working as a team. The strains are applied on a daily basis, and he is able to achieve all the tasks he is assigned. He is focused on producing quality work, and it is for this reason this 31-year employee is here today. We are honoring this outstanding employee today as the Maintenance Employee of the Month. Lauren, congratulations. And if you'd like to say something.
I just want to thank you for this award. But, you know, it takes a team to make things work. And I have a great superintendent, Donnell Harris, and my manager, Hector Rojas, my assistant manager, Mike Gallegos, and my supervisor, Fred Hines. And I just appreciate all the hard work they do, all the guys at 10 that make us get the buses out on time. And just appreciate Metro for all they've done, supported me and my family for, you know, over 30 years. And I'm proud that I have a son that's a second generation. He wanted to come and work for Metro, so he just started recently. Thank you.
Congratulations, Lauren.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We were talking earlier this morning, and Lauren was, the manager was saying that he shows up at 3 or 4 in the morning and is worried about the AM rollout. Gets it done. And I forgot to mention that Robert worked Vermont Avenue during the Olympics. Now, that's saying something. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. We're going to head down for some pictures. Members of the committee, join me.
You come on down and take a picture. Okay, great. Thank you.
You come down for pictures. Okay, we'll next receive the report on system safety, security, and operations.
And that'll be Patrick Purser, DEO of Rail Operations.
Excellent.
Good morning, Chair, Board.
Good morning.
Just going to briefly go through the upcoming rail expansion projects. We're just going to go through those chronologically. There's some details to the right of each slide if you're interested. I won't talk in detail about those particular items, but I'm going to start today with the Foothill Extension Phase 2A, which adds about 11.5 miles to our rail network. There's 3.6 miles of common corridor. What that means is there is parallel Metrolink operations. So not only do we have to comply with Metro and California Public Utility Commission standards, we also must comply with Federal Railroad Administration standards, much like we do on the Blue Line today. This project involves six stations, also includes a full-service maintenance facility. So what that means is we can do heavy repair, and we also have a paint and body shop at that location. Very important addition to our system. This is actually the first full-service maintenance facility that Metro has opened since 1995 with the Blue Line. Just some key dates. The maintenance facility is scheduled to be substantial completion June of this year, followed by the main line substantial completion September of this year. And on the screen, you can see the projected boardings and some other key information. The capacity for that maintenance facility is 84 vehicles. Moving on to the Expo Phase 2, 6.5 mile rail extension. What's key to this project is there's 1.5 miles of street running between 17th Street and Santa Monica Downtown Station, which will be a challenge. There's seven new stations associated with this project, and the mainline substantial completion is scheduled for October of this year, followed by the maintenance facility December of this year. You can see the projected boardings. Even though this maintenance facility is not a full-service maintenance facility, it is at a key location near the end of the line. So what that does is it allows us to minimize the number of non-revenue service hours and allows for rapid response. The Crenshaw Line, 8.5 mile extension, eight stations, also includes a full-service maintenance facility and is planned to open in 2019. And the Regional Connector Project, which is arguably one of the most important projects that Metro is taking on, is approximately 2 miles underground, downtown, really transforms our light rail network, consolidating four light rail lines into two, includes three additional stations. And why this is so important, it removes obstacles for our passengers. Essentially, you know, we talk a lot about attracting choice ridership or getting those discretionary riders, and this project will be key to that effort. Last, I'm going to speak to you briefly about the Purple Line extension. This project is broken down into three sections. Section one is underway and is about 4 miles. This is, again, arguably one of the more important projects that Metro is taking on, because anybody who is familiar with the congestion along Wilshire Boulevard will assure you that we will see, we are sure to see an immediate increase in ridership once this system goes into effect. The existing Division 20 maintenance facility will serve segment one. And we have capacity to do that, and we will continue efforts to expand Division 20 to accommodate the additional vehicles that may be needed. That's all the information I have for you today, unless there's any questions.
Appreciate the report. Any questions by members of the committee?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's move to item 22, which is the authorization for the CEO to increase the contract modification authority to the contract with Global Power to provide Gateway Building emergency generator additions and upgrades. I'll ask for a brief report on this item, and then we'll see if there are any questions by the directors.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I would like to, before Phyllis Ming, who's going to do the presentation, starts, I would like to mention that Ms. Ming, who is head of general services and has been in general services for many years, is retiring at the end of this month and after 28 years of service. So we, I just wanted to thank her for her service and the many accomplishments that we've had under her leadership of the General Services Department. She's restacked the building to move Metrolink in. More recently, we've done cooling towers and boilers and a lot of infrastructure improvements under Phyllis's leadership. So I just wanted to note that before I asked her to present item number 22.
Thank you, and we thank you for your service.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Thank you. We entered into a contract with Global Power to provide and install an additional generator for the building. This board action is to increase the contract modification authority for this particular contract from $216,000 to $250,000. Making the contract modification authority 966, because this is for a new generator. Because when the building was built 20 years ago, we did not understand where we were going technology and how we needed to support the technology. And so all of the systems that need to be kept on emergency power has definitely increased. Most of the cost is due to unforeseen conditions found during the installation. The design of the various different ways to get the electrical, the emergency power and everything, we've had some issues on that. Also, we needed to support our customer, the data center. They needed to get some systems up and running prior to us getting this additional generator online. So we had to go out and get a temporary generator installed, which is installed and will be removed once the new generator is installed. And then also, this has to go, part of the routing of the electrical for this goes through occupied offices, and we do not want to disturb our customers, which are occupants of our building, which are employees. So we've had to reschedule a lot of this work to be done on weekends and nights so that they cannot interrupt their operations. This cost of this will be absorbed in our general services building renovation plan. Also, I'd like you to note that there was a 19.11% SBE goal on that, and they have had a participation of 30.5%. And the project is about 40% complete. We anticipate it to be completed near the end of August. Are there any questions?
Okay, we have a motion to approve the item.
I'll second, but I do have a question.
We have a question by Director DuPont-Walker. Okay.
Thank you so much and for your years of service. And thank you for indicating the SBE goals and kudos to the contractor.
Yes,
and
definitely.
To you for making sure that they not only were met, right. But excelled in meeting those. That goes a long way in Metro being responsible and accountable for resources. Is there any caution that we have at this point? Because it appears that we were unable to anticipate the generating needs initially. Is there any caution now that you would like to advise us of as we look at this item?
When we went to get this additional generator, one of the first things we did was to ask the ITS department and other departments what are their emergency needs going to be, and that is what the new generator is based on, their needs at that particular time. There are other things that might come up. I cannot guarantee, but we have tried to build some additional power in there.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion second to approve the item. Is there additional discussion? Are there any objections? Any speaker requests? So ordered. Okay, let's move to item 23, which is authorizing the CEO to execute a modification with RMI International to provide private security services for April 1, 2015 to September 30th, 2015, and increasing the contract value from $34.6 million to $37.9 million, and canceling a procurement for private security services. Quick report.
Yes, sir, John. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, directors. This request is to authorize the six-month extension of the private security contract. When we went through the procurement of the contract, going up to November of last year, and then this year when the board authorized Basilota to come back with an assessment of the modeling, we wanted to sit back and possibly understand we have to retool the private security contract. There may be changes to what our deployment strategy might be depending on how the audit comes back and how Mr. Leahy goes ahead with approving the direction that we're going to go with it. So we've canceled the contract, and we're asking for an extension to September so that we can evaluate this private security portion of that contract.
So it gives us time to really incorporate this into the overall
The overall strategy, yes. Strategy. Yes, sir.
Questions? Is there a motion?
A motion with kudos for achieving the SBA goals and exceeding them.
Thank you.
Again, this means so much, and we should highlight this in the community so that the community, possible vendors and new partners know that we truly are earnest about our partnership with small businesses.
We really appreciate that. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, so there's a motion, second to approve. Additional discussion or objections? The item is approved. Item 24 is to authorize the CEO to revise the life of project budget for the Metro Security kiosks. Let's have a report on this item, and then I think there's going to be some questions.
Sure. This is a request to reprogram grant funding in the amount of $2 million for a project that is going to have to be reevaluated. The transit passenger information signs are having some difficulty and failing, and so we have to re-engineer what the problems were with the overheating and the sunlight. So when that engineering portion of that program is to a point where funding is required, we're going to go back in and request additional grant funding to move forward. So the $2 million that was committed to that project, we're asking the CEO to authorize that we move that money into our kiosk program to add additional kiosks to the new extensions out in Irwindale, Santa Monica, and putting an additional kiosk down in El Monte. Now, this program has already been approved and is in construction, and all of the internal entities here at Metro, all the departments with construction and planning and the art department and engineering, have all worked together closely to put the design and the locations together for the current 13 station locations.
Okay, so we have the presentation. I have a few questions.
Sure.
Dr. Kanabe?
Yeah, I understand this is reprogramming some Homeland Security dollars. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
So you're taking money out of the blue line and green line to do this. How do we backfill that particular issue, the problem we're having there?
Well, as I explained, sir, that when they get to the point of where in engineering, when they get the fix for the TPIS system, we'll apply for additional grant monies to go ahead and continue that that program to replace the TPIS, the Transit Passenger Information Signs. So I know we're still working through all the acronyms, but the Transit Passenger Information Signs that are out there above the stations.
Right. Yeah. So we don't have any backfill ideas. We have to reapply for a grant. Is that correct?
Well, I can ask the grant manager to come up and answer that, but I believe so, sir. Mr. James Allen. Turn your button on, James.
The Prop 1B grant that supplies this money has a life of 5 years, and we're getting close to using that up. So that's why we're transferring it over to from the blue line signs into the kiosks to make sure that we expend all the money. We don't want to give it back to the state. And when we're ready for the blue line, if there's funding out there, we'll apply for it at that time.
But okay, but the reason you're able to do that right now is because you're having a problem with the system on the blue line and green line. Is that correct? In the TPIS? So my concern is, I mean, I'm okay to go ahead with this, but you're only able to reprogram the money from that particular pot because you've got a problem with that system. When you fix the system, then what happens? You reapply. I mean, that just...
Well, I'll just tell you, from my perspective at least, the green line and the blue line are top priority areas for security. You know, there's a lot of activity out there, and so, you know, if there wasn't money from one pot, it'll be found in a different pot. It needs to be done out there as soon as the passenger information.
I just don't want it to sort of disappear because when and then come back at some future meeting and you'll say, Well, you know, remember the board back on in March of 2015 approved the transfer, the reprogramming money from the Blue Line to Green Line to.
Fair enough. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, actually, I had hoped that we might hold this to get a more thorough report on exactly what these kiosks are going to be, how they will affect the layout at the stations, what they're going to do to the passenger experience. Will there be confusion in terms of what their mission is? Are they providing general information, security, or whatever? So I don't think the board has really received an update of exactly how they will integrate with the information that's being provided to passengers and what they may do to the station layout. So if it is not time critical, I'd like to put this off a month and get a more thorough report.
Why can't we get it back by next week?
I'm fine with that, too.
Not for the reprogramming. We have time to do the reprogramming part of it, and we can certainly give you a board box on the details of the
by next week
program.
We have to wait a month.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
If we can get the board box by next week with more details of how it lays.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
As regards Mr. Kanabe's comment, I understand exactly what you're saying, sir. I'm putting together a list of issues for the coming year. For the benefit of the board and Phil, I will add this item to that list as well as a placeholder for it. Okay.
So forward to the board without recommendation, pending the report from staff. Okay. Let's move to.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's move to item 25, which is consider establishing a LIFR project budget for the Metro Information Security Improvement Program in the amount of $7.8 million. And the FY 2016 portion is $860,000. Report on this.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dave Edwards, the Chief Information Officer. And I've asked Joe Giba, our Deputy CIO, to make this presentation.
Joe? Okay.
Good morning. As you've undoubtedly heard, cyber threats and breaches have been on the increase with major corporations in the news lately, the most recent being Anthem Insurance, Sony, Target, Home Depot, just to name a few. Hackers are becoming more sophisticated. Consequently, our information and operational systems need to be strengthened. We must keep pace with new legislative and data security standards such as PCI, PII, and HIPAA. These pertain to protection of credit cards, personally identifiable information, and personal medical records. Risk penalties and damage to Metro's reputation if we don't. Our solution is to implement a comprehensive information security improvement program. This involves strengthening security safeguards and using a defense in-depth approach. So we want to add several new security systems and tools to protect our security-sensitive information systems. And that's what this project is scheduled to do. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. Okay, is that a motion, or do you have a... Okay, so we got a motion and a second. Is there additional discussion on this item? Are there any objections? Item 25 is approved. Let's proceed to item 26.
Thank you.
Which is elevators, escalators. A constant refrain. Ask for a report on this one.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Lena Babayan, Facilities Maintenance Manager for Contracts and Administration. Item 26, request authorizing the Chief Executive Officer to execute contract modification number 4, contract OP85102554 with Mitsubishi Electric and Electronics USA for elevator escalator maintenance and repair services throughout the Metro Transit System facilities, excluding Gateway Building, to exercise option year 2 for the amount of $8,702,716. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions by members of the committee? This is an extension, right? Was this
correct?
This is just an option.
This contract was awarded in 2011. We're just exercising the last year option under that contract.
Is that correct?
Mitsubishi maintains several elevators and escalators, over 316 of them throughout the system, and they're different manufacturers. But at that time,
I just have a question.
Director Solis?
Yes. I applaud you for your DBE commitment. You've exceeded that what you originally projected. But I was wondering why it hasn't increased. It seems like it's a low number, according to other contracts, where we've been able to actually exceed this percentage. And I'm just wondering if there's any actual requirement.
Seems like at the time this contract was let, the requirements were lower certainly than they are today. We have been progressively increasing the numbers and will continue to do so. We're going into the last option year, and certainly there's going to be a lot of influence that we put out there to try and get a higher goal to meet the standards that we're trying to put out there today.
With competitive responses to the procurement as well.
When will that procurement come back to the board? The re-procurement?
The existing contract expires May 2016, and we are working on the new scope, so we envision to come back in January, February of 2016.
Yeah.
So I'm encouraged that you can actually probably increase this, so I just want to applaud you and move you along so that we do actually exceed our potential here. That's all. So I'll second it.
Okay, motion second. Director DuPont-Walker.
I just joined with Director Solis and commending you for the achievement of the DBE goal. And, of course, anything you can do to increase the compliance percentage would be appreciated.
Okay, is there additional discussion? Are there any objections? The extension is approved. Let's move to item 27.
Mr. Chairman, just one quick question to them. Wasn't there a problem at one point on our protocols related to emergency situations, breakdowns during the middle of the night?
I believe there was. That?
Is that part of the extension?
I think, the notifications when there was a breakdown back to maintenance, it seemed like we had some delays during some critical activities. So I think part of it was to try and expedite that, but I'll leave it to Art to explain in more detail.
Sure.
Chairman Fasana, members of the committee, yes, you're correct, Director Kanabe. If I can take you back to July of 2014, one of the directors raised the issue, and then it was expanded in discussion with the rest of the board, asking about why we have two separate contracts and why there's two separate departments managing the Mitsubishi contracts. In July of 2014, we had a reorganization within operations, and now both contracts are within facilities under my area of responsibility.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Okay, is there additional discussion? Any objections? The item is approved. Let's move to item 27, which deals with additional equipment for IT. Equipment that complies with standards and also with some insurance. I'd like a little more explanation about how that works in terms of what coverage we're obtaining here related to the IT product.
This is actually just coverage, not equipment, right?
I see that it says in the agenda item to supply equipment that complies with current IT standards. So I'm trying to figure out how the equipment and the insurance link. Can get a quick report.
Good morning, board. My name is Chuck Weissman. I'm the project manager for this item. And this item achieves or has asked for two things. One, for a change to procure equipment that complies with the latest IT infrastructure standards, and that is for security and virtual server standards. And ITS had just spoke to that on item 25. At the time that this project was in design, we invited ITS to do a review of our technical specifications, and they informed us that they were undergoing a renovation of their standards and that we would have to probably update this once those were determined. So those standards are now known, and we are asking to authorize a change to the contract to procure hardware that complies with the latest IT standards. And that will achieve a number of things. First of all, it's mandatory that we comply with the latest IT architecture standards. But this also achieves several economies of scale. We will get state-of-the-art cybersecurity provisions. We will integrate seamlessly into the disaster recovery program that ITS has already established. And we also get seamless integration into the various Metro business applications, enterprise applications such as M3, NextTrip Rail, emergency backup control center implementation, and a number of other things. The other thing that this does is affords us the possibility to take all of our SCADA technology, light rail, heavy rail, the new lines, Crenshaw, regional connector, and put them on one platform, which will significantly decrease maintenance logistics, operating costs, and make it easier to transition into service with these new lines. The second item that the question was raised is regarding insurance and how these two are related. They're not really related. It's just a nuance of how the professional liability insurance works. We're required each year to give them an update on change orders. A previous change order to this contract integrated Expo 2 and Foothill into this project. So as part of that yearly update to the underwriters, we give them that new scope, and then they give us a new price to increase the liability insurance. So that item's on here. It has nothing really to do with buying new hardware. It's just part of the underwriting of the insurance.
Questions by members of the committee? Director DePaul Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I want to record this message. Thank you for setting a fairly significant SB participation goal, and kudos to the contractor for establishing a goal higher than the one we set. I do see in your report that it is early in the process with 27%, I think, completion, and we do anticipate that they will achieve this. And so I thank you for the partnership and the monitoring, particularly in a STEM field, where often we say we cannot find the small businesses to participate. So thank you.
And I've also asked Aaron to speak maybe 30, 40 seconds on their commitment to SBE, not only in achieving the 12% goal, but we have a lot of work coming up on Crenshaw, Regional Connector, and we really hope to be able to participate even more. So maybe 30, 40 seconds.
Absolutely.
On behalf of Air Inc., we clearly understand the objective and the value of the DBE. We are totally committed to that. As Chuck was saying, we engaged in this program early. The majority of the work associated with the DBE is tied into the change order 2, which is coming up next. And as soon as that is awarded, we will be able to fulfill our objective.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second? Okay, motion and second to approve the item. Any discussion or objections? This item is approved. We've concluded the action part of the agenda. Let's move to the receive and file part of the agenda. With item 28, this is an update on the Expo and Gold Line Foothill extensions. We'll have a report, and I'll note that we got several of these, and we got construction starting in about 20 minutes, so we'll try and move these through.
Yes, I'm going to report on item 28. I've already provided some information on the Expo and the Foothill 2A, so I will just touch on some of the areas that I didn't speak to earlier. Another important element of this project includes the 78 new light rail vehicles that Metro has procured. Why are these projects so important? Again, they're going to increase our system-wide boardings immediately. We will see a 34% increase in revenue vehicle miles. It also adds a 75% increase in our light rail vehicle maintenance capacity. In order to open these projects, staff categorize the staffing efforts into 11 phases. We've initiated three of those phases. To give you an idea what that looks like, that's about approximately 101 out of 111 positions that have been filled to date, which is 90%. A number of these positions are technical staff that need comprehensive training and certification before these lines go into service. Areas that they support include systems integration testing. And I want to emphasize this because this is the testing that really, an easy way to equate this is failure management testing for our vital systems and the redundancy of those systems. It's very important for Metro to have successful systems integration testing to make sure that when we deliver this, when we deliver these projects, that we avoid any potential catastrophes. In the report, you'll see some discussion about pre-revenue testing and then also staff's effort to facilitate safety training for the communities and for emergency responders, and also some language about the grand opening ceremonies and community free celebrations for both lines. And with that, I'll just ask if there's any questions.
Questions, Director Antonovich?
Just the fact that there was some opposition when we were negotiating this contract and the bids were coming in, and we had the very negative experience from an Italian firm when they were doing a rail contract and they put out an inferior product, which we're recovering. So Conoscero has done a superb job, in providing a product that will be assisting the Gold Line, the Expo Line, the Green Line, the Blue Line, with a quality car, but they're on time. We don't have these delays that were factored in before and the costly overrun. So just commend everyone to the new members who weren't here at this time. This was really a step forward.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
When I arrived here, we were deeply involved with Breda, and it was a nightmare getting it undone. It took years to get it undone. That put us behind the eight ball on this car procurement. So we went for a schedule which is twice as fast as any car delivery in the history of the agency, and the manufacturer is achieving the objective. They're on schedule. This is very important for the Expo and the Gold Lines. Otherwise, we won't have enough cars to run the line. So it's really been a great effort.
Yeah, and I think a lot of credit is due to Mr. Richard Hunt, the general manager of the Rail Vehicle Acquisition Group, who's worked hard with his team to ensure that timely delivery of the rail vehicles.
Absolutely. Director DuPont-Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the report, and I'm surely convinced of the importance of this motion and movement forward. Could you provide in a board box within a week the timeline for the testing and the opening?
Yes.
Thank you.
Director Solis.
Thank you. I just want to add, according to my notes, that we're going to be, for your hiring up of technical individuals and staffing, that we're going to be actually tapping into our apprenticeship council programs, LA Trade Tech, I would assume, and hopefully some other community colleges that also provide this kind of technical training to individuals. And would urge you also to look at our workforce investment programs that are offered by the county, because this is an opportunity to really get individuals from around the county engaged, and sometimes we overlook the fact that there are staffing groups and organizations out there purposely looking to get some of our folks hired into these jobs that are trained and may need an additional certificate, but just to continue that outreach in that manner. I would like to see those efforts made as we move forward. And then the other item is the community outreach. Just want to make sure that the kind of outreach that you do, obviously looking at the different communities that are affected, the targeting, their languages, and just access for them, and reaching out to our individuals that utilize our services, and those are different age groups. So wanting to see how you do that would be helpful.
Yeah, you know, all very good points, great questions. I'll begin with the staffing effort. There's three ways that we go about staffing, and that's internal recruitment and promotion, external recruitment, and then we have a joint apprenticeship program. So I know specifically on the maintenance side, our staff has worked collaboratively with the labor organizations to ensure we have successful apprenticeship programs, and there's a number of them underway, and that will continue to advance as time goes on. And we will obviously look into the
workforce
workforce investment piece. There may already be efforts that I really can't speak to, but that completely makes sense. As far as the outreach goes.
Excuse me, wait 1 second. On that issue, Don, let's Don Ott, I'm talking to. Let's wait now. Just sit down. In response to the director's question, let's come back in a coming month or two and report on the historic actions which you've taken and the results. We have a great deal of outreach to community colleges and the sorts of things. Let's bring that back to the board and let them know what's going on.
That's good. But I think the WIA component is one that is underutilized, not just by this organization, but by many.
Sure.
And they actually help you identify individuals who can fit the actual requirements of the job. And that's a free service that's provided that the government pays for, both the county and the city.
I think we'd welcome that if we can maximize the hiring of people locally and bring.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as the outreach to the community, the staff focuses on about a 1.5-mile radius along the entire alignment, and they're focusing businesses, schools, really any community organizations and. They do outreach with safety training and want to make sure that the community is aware of what's up and coming and how to be safe and what this new system offers for their community as well.
Good.
Excellent. We'll receive and file that report with a report to come back, updating the efforts of Metro. And let's move to item 29, which is to, let's see, make sure I've got that right, is to receive the update on the motion by Directors Garcetti, DuPont Walker, Kanabe, and Solis concerning Metro's plans of action to maximize competition in its procurements and to expand opportunities for small business participation. Welcome,
morning.
Stephanie.
Good morning, Chair Fasana. Stephanie Wiggins, Executive Director of Vendor Contract Management. I'm joined this morning by Victor Ramirez, our DEO Procurement, to give you a brief presentation on the action items that the board passed and directed us to look at to maximize opportunities for small business. I will note, as we've been measuring our performance for just this fiscal year, I'm happy to report that through the board's actions and the CEO's delegated authority, this agency has awarded more than $335 million to certified small businesses. When you add that to all of last fiscal year, more than $631 million has been awarded to certified small businesses. Yet we understand are committed to doing more, and I'm going to turn over to Victor to talk to you about how we're going to do more.
The genesis of this discussion began in December when we were asked how we were performing in terms of adequate competition. And the definition of that was whether or not we received two or more bids or proposals. The FTA has a slightly different definition of that, but basically, how are we performing? And we're achieving 88% currently. That's not a bad number, but we know we can do better. The board asked us to look at four specific areas to try to improve that record and try to expand opportunities for small businesses. But before I talk about those four items, and they are look at specific recommendations for the areas of maintenance, professional services, and inventory. Talk to the FTA about their definition and perhaps increasing their threshold on what the definition of adequate competition is. Expanding our outreach on our informal procurements. Currently, we do not publicize our informal solicitations. Those are procurements between 3,000 and 100,000. We do about 6,000 a year. It's a large number. And putting those on our website. And last, looking at the feasibility of creating mandatory goals for the SBE program as it relates to the RFPs that we issue. But even before that discussion began, Vendor Contract Management had begun and initiated several areas of improvement, of self-improvement, that are addressing many of these issues already. The first is, we think, one of our most important, and that is the creation of a vendor portal that that provides for the vendor community a single point of outreach where they can find information that they need to do business with Metro. And one of the elements within that vendor portal is a 12-month look ahead. That 12-month look ahead is something that we've never done before. We have created many look aheads for our procurements, for our business, for our different business units. They've had their own lists, and now for the first time, we're consolidating all of those procurement look ahead lists to a 12-month. Report that is available. It'll be online and it'll be on that vendor portal. And we've begun beta testing on the portal, and we hope to, in the very near future, release that so that everyone then can benefit from this one-stop community outreach. The next is to develop an internal procurement user manual, which we think will improve in how our internal clients, our project managers, plan and develop their project definitions. This is important as it relates to providing enough time for the procurements, the acquisitions, to obtain the outreach, and also so that we don't create restrictive qualifications and requirements. And of course, we want to do training of that to our project managers. As Stephanie talked about, the overall agency's performance in small business awards and DBE awards, we've also created a SBE set-aside program, and this, we think, is a real game changer. This set-aside program has already awarded over 100 small business prime contracts. That's a 26% increase over FY14, and we still have many months to go in FY15. We're going to shatter those numbers. So that's a real important element, and that allows us to set aside for SBEs up to $5 million for construction and $3 million for pro services. We're also looking internally as to how we create our solicitation packages, trying to simplify our RFPs and our terms and conditions. That's ongoing, and we hope to be able to release something as early as April. And just as important, we now are going to measure ourselves. We weren't measuring and we weren't identifying how we were performing. Once you start measuring yourself, you can then focus on improvement, and that's what we're doing.
Okay, at this point, does this conclude the report? I know we...
It can. We can take questions if you wish.
Okay, let me ask if there are questions by members of the committee. I know we're moving on to Director Kanabe's time for...
I do, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure whether we short-circuited your presentation or not, but let me say thank you. To you, Ms. Wiggins, and to the staff for the hard work on this issue and for the timely report back and for the fact that you've actually initiated some things in the process which will move us forward. Can you share, I know we have APTA peer review, and so you're talking to your colleagues across the country. Are we trailblazing on this as it relates to other transit agencies?
I believe we are, but we are working on data collection so we can report back and benchmark formally with other agencies. I believe we are unique among the top 10 transit agencies in the country to have a set-aside program. Given the significant impact of our construction program, we believe the contract dollars that we've been awarding even this fiscal year put us at the top in the country, but we can report back on a formal benchmark.
Okay. And you also shared the dollar value of contracts we're awarding. What is the percentage of for that same figure?
For this fiscal year, that percentage tracks at 17%, a little over 17%.
And we will set a goal?
Our goal is 25%.
Okay. Could you go into more detail about how we will ensure the minimum qualifications are not overly restricted? We hear sometimes from our small businesses that they are unable to comply.
Yeah, this is where we think our user manual, our procurement user manual, and the training that'll follow for project managers to recognize and understand that within their solicitation, within their product definition and requirements, We can't include things that are restrictive that only allow perhaps the incumbent to win the contract, requirements that that limit competition. And so together, training our project managers, training our contract administrators and buyers to recognize those kinds of restrictions, things like brand naming. If we can address those things, we think, as well as the outreach on the other side, we think we can improve competition and increase the base of our suppliers.
Thank you.
Director Solis?
I want to thank you for the report back and want to applaud you for taking into consideration some of the thoughts that the board has directed you to look at. But I just have a question in terms of outside groups that provide information to you in terms of how to reform or make more accessible information. Is there a process for that, or is there an entity that exists beyond just, you know, talking to individuals that may have gone through the process? Is there a formal organization like a task force or a group that you regularly speak to of diverse areas from our various county, from the county?
Yes, Director Solis. By state statute, the Transportation Business Advisory Council was formed specifically for Metro, with its mission to advise the agency on opportunities for small businesses. Forgot how long they've been in existence. I think it's about...
They're here today, and they have a request to speak to them.
Okay, great.
Okay.
They meet monthly, though, here in our offices, and some of the initiatives that the board has identified in this motion that we are reporting back today that we will implement have also been shared through the TBAC Advisory Council.
And how are those members appointed, or how are they identified?
Essentially, they have a membership which requires representatives from ethnic, gender-related small business groups. So there's a representative from the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the Asian American Chamber of Commerce. Let me ask Tasha if she's in the audience. She can come and speak with more detail about the membership and the composition, but it's a formal membership process.
Is it by invitation only, or how are you selected to be a member? I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
Sure. There are elections that are held every 2 years, and so the board chair, the TBAC chair, has a membership committee that handles the elections every 2 years, and they select a board, a chair, a vice chair, a parliamentarian, a secretary, and a vice chair. And so that's the composition of the TBAC organization. There are, I believe, currently 15 members, and as Stephanie mentioned, they are minority women-owned small business organizations throughout the county. That includes, as Stephanie mentioned, the African American Chamber of Commerce. We have the Native American Business Organization. We have representation from all of the various DBE, SBE groups, as you will, that are a part of the TBAC organization. Each organization identifies a representative and a secondary person there that will represent the organization at each monthly meeting. We do meet the first Thursday. TBAC meets the first Thursday of every month right here in the boardroom. They have a set of agenda. The agenda is posted within 48 hours of the meeting. And it's open to the public. It's a public meeting. And their board brings forth standard items throughout the month to talk about, and the vendor contract management, as well as the diversity and economic opportunity department, is there to share contracting opportunities, to talk about the procurement process, and to address whatever concerns or issues they bring forward.
Is it possible to get the listing, the actual membership, who they represent, and what their rotation is of that membership? One of my concerns that I've been hearing is that some of our local chambers from some of our unincorporated areas, for example, in East Los Angeles, have had difficulty in obtaining information about contracts and actually getting the foot in the door. And I would love to see what kind of representation you have and how that might also be expanded in some way, or possibly having some of those meetings held out in the community so people can attend sure. and learn more.
TBAC has bylaws, and the bylaws set forth the criteria as far as the organizations, what they have to meet to be a part of TBAC, sets forth the elections of the officers. So we could provide you with that list of the current makeup of the organization as well as the TBAC bylaws.
I think this is a really important item because I think moving forward as we are trying to build out our database of individuals that might be interested in participating in opportunity contracting opportunities with MTA, that we continue to seek out and formalize some type of structure that actually may cause us to look back and say what changes are needed so that we can fully include more parts of our county.
Absolutely. Director Kanabe, followed by Director Bowen, then we want to hear from TBAC.
No, I just wanted to thank you for a great report. I mean, the progress is being made, and I thought the responses were proper, and appreciate your efforts. Just want to say thanks, that's all.
Thank you. Director Bowen? Okay. At this point, we have a request from Al Solis and members of TBAC to address the committee.
I have a short letter that I want to read from the chair. First of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Prior to doing that, I'd like to allow the rest of the members here to introduce themselves.
Please do so.
Good morning. My name is Thomas Pringle. I'm with Universal Reprographics, and I consider myself the poster child of success for TBEC and for Metro's the EOD processes as we move through the line of success in awarding a lot of the contracts that my company has currently been supporting Metro on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rubina Chaudhry, president of Mars Services, former financial officer of TBAC, representing WeBank West, Women Business Enterprise Council, and Saban, South Asian Business Professionals. I really want to thank from the bottom of my heart and from the membership for a couple important things. And one of them is this shared responsibility program. And I think we are seeing the results of that. This is truly in reach. And the second is the whole DEOD team. Tasha, your leaders and your supports are wonderful, and we in TBAC enjoy and appreciate working with you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Scott Simpson. I also represent Mars Services, and we are very pleased to be a part of this organization, and we have benefited greatly from your goals for SBEs and DBEs. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Zelda Harrison, principal of Zell Design, specialized in marketing and public outreach. I've been attending TBAC meetings for the past 2 years, and I'd like to thank vendor contract management for the work they've done, particularly in highlighting publication of informal contracts.
And my name is Al Solis. I am with Coleman Construction. I am part of the Hispanic Engineers and Business representative for TBAC. We've been direct benefactors on various occasions, all the way from the environmental consulting to now currently I'm working on some of the major construction projects that are taking place. Director DuPont Walker mentions and thanks everybody for the goals that were set and the accomplishment of these goals. I want to thank everybody here on behalf of the small business community and TBAC for those opportunities that have made themselves available. DEOD itself has really driven a lot of the policy and allowed us to succeed in this arena. So I'm truly grateful for Linda Wright, Tasha Smith, and Miguel Cabral for the work that they put forth in giving us these opportunities. I'd like to read this letter. TBAC is fully supportive of this motion to expand opportunities for small businesses' participation at Metro. We applaud the Metro Board, and in particular Directors Garcetti, DuPont Walker, Kanabe, and Solis, for taking the initiative of drafting and proposing this motion. TBEC believes that this action will provide more opportunities for small business and increase Metro's pool of qualified vendors providing quality services and competitive costs. The 12-month vendor portal look ahead will welcome most businesses as well as all the, allow vendors, contractors to become aware and prepare well in advance qualified bids to undertake the services requested. Another feature of this motion to post informal solicitations on the vendor portal will greatly appreciate all businesses as these opportunities will be easier to locate on bid. Unbundling larger projects to encourage small businesses participations combined with Metro Small Business Set Aside programs can result in significant increase in small businesses, priming the work which will increase the number of qualified competitors as the small businesses grow and become more sophisticated in bidding and managing projects. And very important mandatory SBE goals for requests, proposals will have a significant impact on SBE participation as we've witnessed that any contract without mandatory goals results in less than expected SBE participation. TBEC looks forward to continue to work with the board and staff for the benefit of the community and Metro Services. Respectfully yours, Lucia Tam, TBEC Chair.
Hey, we thank you for your service on TBEC. We thank you for being here today, and I want to thank staff for their presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Okay, the commissioner is trying to speed up baseball, and I think I'm going to ask to see if we can speed up this report as well, since the Dodgers are about to begin service, as are we.
In other words, make it short.
Very good. Well, we began the Dodger Express service in the 2010 season.
Let's speed up to
40. And ridership has grown from 120 to approximately 220,000. We operate 14 buses, and we again have been funded by the MSRC committee to reduce carbon and reduce traffic trips to and from Dodger Stadium.
Questions by members of the committee? It's been a success.
Mr. Chairman, again, this is another program that we fought for. Could never get adopted. Now we're having 200,000 people plus using it. And now, again, with Metrolink, with Angel Stadium as well. So, again, these types of programs many times have a wall of resistance to get adopted. But once they get adopted, it helps lessen the traffic, I know, in the downtown area for the people who live and work here. And, again, it's a great program that works. And it's one that needs to be expanded and will be because you have some innovative ways of having some other stations being accessing this. So I just commend you for doing a good job.
Thank you, sir.
The supervisor is correct. My predecessor said we could not do this service because it's point-to-point. That is charter service, which is illegal. I use this as an example to young managers here. When I arrived, the request came to me, but it's illegal. So how did we solve that problem? There's 1,000 ways around the barn, not one, not two. We put a bus stop at Broadway. Now it's no longer point to point. As a consequence, we started the service, and we've encountered the success that Mr. Page has just outlined.
Hey, well, we thank you for the report and the innovation to bring the service forward.
Yes.
Okay, we have three items left. We're well into Director Kanabe's time. I know the Transit Policing Committee did not meet this month. Do we need this report today? I'm going to ask members of the committee, or can we carry it to the next month? Okay.
Thank you.
We'll carry this item forward. I believe there's interest to hear the report on the zero tolerance policy for red light violations. So let's have a quick report on 32. Obviously, a very serious matter.
We can skip C.
Good morning, I'm Karen Gorman from the Inspector General's Office, here to present on red light violations research that we did. Move the slide, Jack, we're going to go in a hurry here. First of all, some of the things we've completed as a result of the request or direction that came in just February recently was we have met with many people in the agency, including labor relations, operations, safety,
and some outside rail experts even to obtain some information on this topic. We've obtained a lot of documentation, incident reports, disciplinary reports, copies of the contracts that we have with our unions who are related to this subject area. We recently had a new agreement go into place with our operators concerning red light violations just in December of 2014. At that time, red light violations went from minor infractions to major infractions. So that was a significant impact. I wouldn't say what we have, it depends on how you interpret what a zero tolerance policy is. If zero tolerance means that in any time it happens, automatically the person is fired and there's no discussion about it, then no, we don't have such a policy. According to our investigation with other agencies, no one else has exactly that kind of policy either. If zero tolerance means that in every case it's investigated, it's reported to management, if it's determined to be what you would call chargeable or avoidable, that there's disciplinary action taken, then yes, we do have that kind of policy. And it did go up in December from, again, minor to major recently. So I think we need to be monitoring what's occurring in this area, see if the new level of discipline is being an adequate deterrent in this area and addressing recidivism as well. And we need to be monitoring that to see if we get improvements in these numbers. Now, as you can see from the slide before you, we've had a number of incidents over the past several years in the blue line. Still looking at what exactly is the root cause of that. It was suggested to me that possibly it's a matter of a lot of new operators coming into that line. It's also the most complicated line. One of the other things I did to do this research for today was to ride in the cab myself, and that was quite eye-opening for me to do that. And so I think we need to be monitoring these numbers, have reports coming to the board, and looking at what's going on with this to see if this new policy is in fact working. If it's not working, then we need to address that. How the contract works is there's what I call Section 1 and Section 2 violations under the major violation section of the contract. For bus, when there's a red light violation, there's progressive discipline that starts with counseling, it goes to warnings, it has training, you go to suspensions, and then you go to more serious, higher level discipline. If it's a serious violation, very egregious, they might just skip all that and go directly to hearing, frankly. I don't know that that's happened too often, how many times that I'm still collecting data on that. Maybe Mr. Leahy is aware of those numbers, but I'm still looking into that situation. As to rail, you go directly to hearing. You don't get counseling or warnings. You just go directly to hearing for serious implications. Our imposition of discipline is typically, I believe, starting at 5 days suspension for the first violation, moving to 30 days for a second, and on the third one, you're going to be taken out of the rail system entirely. That seems to be very consistent, if not aggressive, compared to what other agencies are doing. But yet, we still need to bring down, I would like to see these numbers, particularly on the blue line, and so we need to keep monitoring that, and I would like reports to continue to come to you on this so that we can have transparency and promote accountability.
Karen, can I
just
make...
Yes, sir. Sure.
Let me just describe what when we say in the contract subject to a hearing, that means subject to major discipline, which could be termination on first event, depending upon the details of the case. It's a euphemism, if you will. Instead of saying you're going to get fired, we say subject to a hearing. But that's what it means, because a major hearing is a place where major discipline can occur. Thank you.
Yes, sir. So where I'd like to go with this is there's some short-term recommendations that I have and then some longer-term recommendations. In the short term, there's hardly ever a downside to promoting compliance through an awareness campaign.
And so I would recommend that our operations management look to that, our safety management look to that, and have an awareness campaign to promote safety in these stop violations that are occurring and see if we can make some improvements there and watch those trends and report back to you on that. I also noticed in some of the materials that I was reading in these last couple of weeks that the NTSB, when they looked at the WMATA accident that happened some years ago that you may recall, they were very critical of the WMATA board for not having enough training, education, information, monitoring, and carrying out those responsibilities. Obviously, the day-to-day operations are the CEO's and management's responsibilities and not the board's, but I would certainly like to not have that happen at Metro, that the NTSB was being critical of our board for not having enough information, and that's, again, an easy fix. So particularly because we have a lot of new board members, I would recommend to Mr. Leahy that he, if he would be so kind as to put in motion a safety orientation that's done on a small group or one-on-one basis for the new board members. Any board member who is not driven a bus, which Art makes all of us do, and run over those cones and see how that is difficult, and ride in the cabs and experience what I did when it's like Christmas tree lights on those intersections. The lights are everywhere. They're flashing. They're solid. There's all different colors. To experience that, I think would greatly increase your insight into these areas and fulfill more of your monitoring duties, and that we would not then be subject to that potential criticism. And I welcome your opportunity to do that if that could be done in the next 90 days. I would further recommend that you continue to receive more technical reports, more of these incident reports, reports that outline the correlation between the claims that we receive for injuries and the amounts and the volumes correlated to the type of violation that may have resulted from. Because if you do at some point want to look at increasing the discipline for people, you're going to have to make a case for that. You're going to have to show that there's been injuries, there's been increases, that the discipline we've had before isn't working, that other agencies are doing more. You're going to have to make that case. So let's start doing that if that were to happen, and be monitoring that. Transparency and accountability to you promotes improvement performance, I think. So I'd like to see that happening. If you look at your agenda today, 95% of it is approving contracts. That's your job. That's important. But there's not a lot of technical reports being brought to you that maybe aren't so sexy to listen to and take up your time, but I'd like to see more of that coming to you, because that's how you gain more insight as to how our system works, and I think you need that information.
Excellent point, by the way.
In the longer term, we'll continue to look at these things. I'll come back and continue to talk to you about this. I'll continue with the task that I was given in the last board meeting to hire a safety consultant and work with them to see if we can, you know, come back with some insightful comments to you. And we'll continue to monitor these trends and see if the higher level of dispositions that are being imposed as a result of the recent contract are, in fact, working or not. So those are some of my recommendations just after 3 weeks of review. I'm not a rail expert or bus expert yet, but that's my preliminary report. Do you have any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, next is a call on Director Antonovich and then Director DuPont-Walker.
My concern was that the letter that our CEO had sent to the American Public Transportation Association asking for the peer review did not include the fact that the motion I had introduced with Supervisors Solis, Mark Ridley Thomas, and Don Canabi to conduct an independent review of our rail operating practices and programs through the lens of safety culture, and that we were directing you, the Inspector General, to oversee this to maintain an independent, impartial review so that we would have that information. Because the letter made it sound like we're just conducting some academic exercise and not responding to the failures that we have had that resulted in this.
I'd be happy to participate in that activity.
Thank you.
We'll be happy to provide APTA with the resolution.
Thank you.
Director DuPont-Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so long ago, DUIs were treated in this country as something not important, and they were routinely reduced to reckless driving. I was a part of a team that went across the country having judges participate in simulated training to understand the importance of that issue. I think we are here in the transit area, so I strongly support the orientation for board members as long as it's simulated. I don't think I really want to drive across the cones.
Well, it's great. You do it in, ART doesn't let you out on the road. Don't worry. You have to be in a closed parking lot. But it's a very good experience, and I recommend you all do it if you haven't done it. I have to tell you, when I rode in that cab last week of the train, I'm barely exaggerating when my initial reaction was I was like on the Las Vegas Strip, looking at all those lights. It was lit up like a Christmas tree. Up in the right-hand corner, there was green, there was yellow, there was red. In the lower hand corner on the left, there was lights coming out of the ground. There was flashing lights, there was solid lights, there was round lights, there was bar lights. And I put myself in the position of the train operator as if he wasn't there and I was driving, and as I approached that intersection and I was trying to decide if I needed to stop, and I couldn't decide, and a wave of panic came over me because I didn't know what to do, and thankfully I wasn't in the driver's seat, but it certainly made me understand that that particular system has got a lot of things going on that we need to help our operators be successful in that regard, and anything we can do to make that happen. And the technology is a big part of this as well. The incidents that happened, such as at WMATA and even the one that happened with Metrolink, they were all impacted by technology. So we cannot only look at the human factors. We have to look at how humans are interacting with technology and how those two factors are both having a play in our success in avoiding accidents and being safe.
I'll just say driving a bus isn't like driving a Ford Fusion. I won't say any more about my experience in that. And I will also say that the ergonomic factors you bring up may be worth looking to see if there's been some innovation there. Yeah. Director Kanabe, Director Sleaze? Okay. ART?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I, like Karen, am not an expert in bus or rail operations, having only been in the business for a little while. How I will say, there are many people who do represent themselves to be experts, and some may be and others may not be. I would strongly recommend that on this safety consultant that it be competed so that you may have a chance to hear from different folks who have different levels of knowledge and expertise on the topic. With that, I will conclude. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. Let's have the report of the CEO, and then we'll turn it over to Director Kahn.
Thank you for your time.
Yes.
I'll just note congratulations to Phil Washington. I am going to Metrolink. I met with their board the other day. They've informed me that some think their board is sometimes contentious, sometimes there's friction, sometimes there's conflict, and sometimes difficulty. I told them I look forward to working with them, as I have no experience with a board like that. With that, Mr. Chair, I will conclude.
Okay, with that, if there is no additional business before the committee, certainly I'm glad to hear that you hold our board as such a peaceful board.
Yes, sir.
And with that, we're adjourned.